Welcome to the Banking with Life podcast. I'm your host, James Nethery. And you know that we talk only about the infinite banking concept, all things becoming your own banker here at the Banking with Life channel. And you surely know, if you don't know, you should know, the creator of the concept of becoming your own banker was my dear late friend and mentor, R. Nelson Nash. I got to know the young man about 2005-ish, here it is, 2024. So for the last 20 years, I have practiced the infinite banking concept. And, you know, he graduated a few years ago. But from the time I met him until he graduated in 2019, I did everything in my power to be his water boy. If he turned around with an empty hand and needed something, I wanted to have it ready for him. I dearly miss him, think about him an awful lot. And just the other day was kind of going down, you know, memory lane, kind of reminiscing about some of the conversations that we had over the years. And so I thought I would just invite you to go down memory lane with me, and I hope you enjoy listening. Thank you.
How many of you understand what I'm saying when I say Austrian economics? Well, that's what I thought, because this is not what most people think. You see, there are three schools of thought out there in the economic world. The most prominent one, the one that has got the world in the grip of an idea, is Lord Maynard Keynes, K-E-Y-N-E-S, Keynes. The entire world is just eaten up with his stupidity. And I can't make it any plainer than that. The essence of Keynesian thought is that you can get rich by spending money. How many of you remember August 16, 1971? What happened that day? Anybody? Yes, sir. Thank you for that. I'm amazed. Thank you. We went off the gold standard. Well, look what has happened at that time. And I remember Richard Nixon staying on television there. We're all Keynesians now. Now, Linda, if I'd had a brick, I'd have thrown it through the television. But all that done just broke my television. But I did yell at the television screen, "You're not talking about me. You're saying we're all Keynesians. I'm not one of them." His thought process that people have been so enamored with has put the world in the worst financial condition of all time. Do y'all have that general feeling that there's something wrong in the financial world today? He's the cause. Yeah. Now, there's another school of thought, economic thought, and that's the Chicago school. That's Milton Friedman. How many of y'all know something about Milton Friedman? He's given John the credit of being a free market economist. But John, he was a monetarist, sir. There had to be a constant increase in the money supply, or, well, we would all, our economy would stagnate and we'd be in deep trouble. Well, he's absolutely wrong. Only the Austrian school has got it right. Now, the Austrian school of thought started in Salamanca, Spain, 300 years ago. Now, over a period of time, it migrated to Vienna, hence the name Austrian. Now, Carl Menger and Eugene Bombay Work were pioneers that established this school of thought, but the real hero that came along was Ludwig von Mises, M-I-S-E-S. Now, the Mises, M-I-S-E-S, organization, the Mises Institute, is located in Auburn, Alabama. Now, that's not part of Auburn University. It's a private think tank, and it's the best in the world. It has worldwide influence. Now, it got started here in the USA shortly after World War II. 1946, Foundation for Economic Education was started in Irvington, New York, by Leonard E. Reed and four or five other guys. I'll think of the others in a few minutes. But Leonard Reed was my mentor. I had the good fortune of getting exposed to the Foundation for Economic Education in 1957. Now, having finished college in 1952, I had 2 years of active duty with the Air Force obligation because I was a ROTC student during the Korean mess. I went to work in Eastern North Carolina in forestry consulting, and I came face to face with the mental paralysis that socialism causes. I didn't know anything about that stuff, Sarah, but inherently I knew something was wrong. You see, I'm very proud of the fact that in college, Economics 101, that was Paul Samuelson, who was a borderline communist. I made it a D plus. I'm proud of that. I didn't have all that much to wash out of my brain. Now, we were on a quarter system at Georgia when I was there. Senior year, winter quarter, I made five A's and a C. The C was in forest policy. Again, inherently, I knew something was wrong. But when I go to work in forestry in Eastern North Carolina, I come face to face with the mental paralysis that stupid idea causes in people's minds. I could not believe my eyes. Why would anybody behave that way? All right, so I'm at a social gathering at the home of this radiologist, and I'm mouthing off about what I'd run into and how weird this kind of thinking was about socialist ideas. You got to understand that this is Eastern North Carolina. Johnson County, North Carolina, is the second largest tobacco county in the world. Now, when I say tobacco, are we talking about a government program? And the thought process that goes with all these people here, everything is centered around a government program. Well, so here I am mouthing off what I ran into. And the radiologist says, "Sound like you need to read this book." Went back to his library, got Henry Hazlitt, that's the other co-founder of Foundation for Economic Education, H-A-Z-L-I-T-T. Henry Hazlitt's Economics in One Lesson. Read this. Well, about 10 days later, I've got the book back in his hands, Kenny. And I said, "I have two questions. Where you guys been hiding this stuff? And why'd y'all hide it from me?" He said, "Well, look, if you like what you read, says, what you read here, says, get on this mailing list for this journal called The Freeman, put out by Foundation for Economic Education. Says, now, all you gotta do is ask for it. Now, they're supported entirely by donations. They will never ask you for money. But if you haven't thrown some money in them, John, in a year's time, they'll just take you off the mailing list, that's all." Now, the more I read, the better it got. I was particularly attracted to Leonard E. Reed, and the guy, the founder, and I also was attracted to Dr. Clarence Carson, which I'll talk about later. Now, when I mentioned Leonard Reed and Henry Hazlitt as the two principal founders of Foundation for Economic Education, let me tell you, neither one of those guys had a college degree. Neither did Herbert Spencer in England years before. But Leonard Reed was the most educated man I ever met in my life. Humblest guy you could possibly ask for. The way we're going about education is absolutely stupid today. Look, on the internet, you can get a fabulous education and it doesn't cost you a thing. But we've got a weird idea that's been planted in people's minds that there's got to be bricks and mortar and high-priced stuff going on. We'll be dwelling on this more and more as time goes by, okay? The arrival syndrome. This is the worst thing that can happen to you. When you've arrived, everything is downhill. Yeah. Yeah. You're on a downhill slide from then on. Here's some manifestations of it. I know everything, so there's no point in trying to teach me something new. I've arrived. Daniel Borstein, the historian, phrased it this way. He said, the greatest obstacle to discovering the shape of the earth, the continents, and the oceans was not ignorance, it was the illusion of knowledge. Yeah, there ain't no more. Do y'all know that sometime in our checkered past in this country, Congress came within one vote of doing away with the patent office? Everything that's been invented has already been invented. So. Malcolm Forbes said, the dumbest people I know are those that know it all. So this is the worst. All right, now, here is the great explanation of it. This is Sir Francis Drake's prayer before he set out to be the first man to circumnavigate the world in 1577. Disturb us, O Lord, when we're too well pleased with ourselves, when our dreams have come true because we dream too little. We arrive safely because we sail too close to the shore. Disturb us, O Lord. With the abundance of things we possess, we've lost our thirst for the waters of life. Having fallen in love with life, we've ceased to dream of eternity. And in our efforts to build a new earth, we've allowed our vision of the new heaven to dim. Disturb us, O Lord, to dare more boldly, to venture on wider seas where storms will show your mastery. Where losing sight of land, we'll find the stars. We ask you to push back the horizons of our hopes. Push us in the future in strength, courage, hope, and love. This we ask in the name of our captain, who is Jesus Christ. I can't praise it any better than that. So keep in mind this arrival syndrome and recognize it when you see that in people and avoid it in your life totally. Now, 1957 was a great year in my life. I started my own business. I got acquainted with the Foundation for Economic Education that year. But in January of that year, I heard Earl Nightingale's first recording, The Strangest Secret. May I see the hands of those who know about Earl Nightingale? All right, good. What a guy. He cut that recording, The Strangest Secret, in late 56. And so I'm hearing it in January of 57. I couldn't wait to get my copy, Scott. I memorized it. Now, in those days, I paid $35 for that long play recording. Well, that's about $150 today. So that was great money to spend right there. Now, the strangest secret, Earl Nightingale says, is that you become what you think about all day long. You become what you think about all day long. Well, some folks say, that can't be possible. If that were true, all men would become women. Now you can take the most absolute of truth and somebody will find a way to pervert the meaning of it. But no, it's absolutely true. Second, third, fourth grade, Athens, Georgia, I'm living across the road from the airport. I knew that I had to become an aviator one day. 6 years later, I soloed on that field. But my point is, regardless of what your background is, if you have a desire for something, it's going to happen. If you have a desire for something, it's going to happen. So be careful what you think about. It could be bad. Yeah. We're golden achieving beings, Nightingale says. By what means are you trying to achieve your goals? So what do you really believe? That's what's at core here with this concept of infinite banking. I want to put you in the banking business. You got to understand how it works. You got to get some capital, Charlie. Then you got to get a charter from the commissioner downtown here in the state capitol. Now, until you get a charter, you're not a bank. Now, once you get a bank, a charter, you get all these other people to put money in your bank. And you lend their money before they withdraw it. That's what banks do. Adam Smith, Mike, in his book, Paper Money, he says, a bank can't make a loan unless he has a deposit. I says, I hate to say that so baldly, but when 3 out of 10 college graduates in America don't know we have to import oil, they says, I don't mind saying something bald. Bankers don't lend their money. They lend money other folks put there. That your capital, Charlie, made it a safe place for people to deposit money, and you lend their money before they withdraw it. Now, do you think you're the only dude in Colorado who wants to get in the banking business? What do y'all think? That line is a mile long. Y'all think Charlie can break in line? I don't think so. Charlie, it'll take you 10 years to get to the head of the line. Okay? Now, all that time, you're down there courting that commissioner, trying to get him to get you further up the line, and you're funneling him money under the table to keep in line. Am I lying? Now, whenever I hear the word commissioner, Wes, I think of an iceberg. That's what you see. So that's what the iceberg looks like. 90% of the iceberg is out of sight, isn't it, Greg? 90% of Charlie's dealing with the commissioners under the table. Am I lying? Okay. Smith goes on to point out Adam Smith. Now, that's not the real Adam Smith. That's a writer for Esquire magazine. He's a funny fella, and he's also accurate. He says, you got to keep a prudent relationship between the capital and deposits of the loans. If you don't, your bank is going under. Now, proof positive of that, Wes, is the story of First National Midland, Texas, September 1983. Now, Midland, Texas, Frank, is the richest city in America per capita. Oil patch country. First National in 1983 in September was a 94-year-old bank. So I don't care how old you are, Darlene. I don't care how rich you are. If you don't obey the basic principles out there, you're going under. Now, the other part that's the background, I told you, is the Austrian economics. I got hooked on that in 1957, and that is my passion. Infinite banking concepts is nothing more than Austrian economics in action. The world has never been right about anything. Why do you want to listen to those guys? You can get the money during these horrible times from State Farm Life, New York Life, and Equitable Life at 5, 6, and 8% interest. And the only thing that limits how much you can get to is the same thing they ask you, Walt. Now, at the bank, when you ask them, how big a check can you write? They say, Walt, how much you got in here, sir? That's how big a check you can write. All right, now, don't y'all get hung up on any figures I use, okay? I'm talking about 30 years ago. At that time, I was paying $18,000 a year in life insurance premiums. Yeah, but I was paying the banks $120,000 a year, interest alone, and they hated me. And what I saw, Susan, I needed to reverse the polarity of my cash flow. It dawns on me as an economist that there's only one pool of money out there. The fact that various and sundry banks, insurance companies, corporations, and individuals in various and sundry countries and currency denominations is managing a portion of that pool, Frank, is incidental. Judy, the money in your purse is part of the banking system. All right. Now, money has got to flow. Okay? And there's only one pool out there. The question is, how much of the pool do you control as it relates to your needs? Okay? For instance, everybody needs a heart. Would you agree, Susan?
Absolutely.
Now, what is that heart? It is a pool of blood, and it's a pump, and it walks. It pumps the blood wherever it's needed. Y'all notice the flow of the water, the flow of the air, the flow of the blood. If you don't have a heart, you're in deep trouble. And if you got one, it's got to be functioning, or otherwise you're in deep trouble. You won't be with us very long. My answer is that most people know so little about the most important business in the world, banking. They've abdicated their responsibility, Doug, / opportunity, and they're doing the equivalent of living off of a heart-lung machine 35% of the time. Absurd. You should never be on a heart-lung machine. All right. Now, there are thousands of people out there now that we've taught this to, and they're practicing it now. They'll never see a bank again in their life. Checking account for convenience sake, Charlie, of course. But as far as the major things in life, absolutely not. My wife and I haven't seen a bank in 17 years. It's not necessary. You get off that system. Anybody can do it. It's all proportional. All right, so here's the annual pattern of spending for my all-American young man. He's 29 years old, Keith, making $28,500 a year after taxes. Now, as an economist, I can tell you pretty well that that's what's going on out there today. That's the everyday guy. Well, what does he do with $28,500? He buys cars or transportation of some kind, and 20% out of every dollar he spends is on transportation. We're a mobile society. He spends 30 cents out of every dollar on housing. I know that for truth because I've been around the home building business for many, many years. He's spending 40 cents out of every dollar on living. Trini, that's clothes, groceries, contributions, charity, Bank of America card, boat payments, one of the necessities of life. Things of that nature. Let's say he's saving 10% of whatever he makes, Cheryl. That's a bald-faced lie. But you see, I want to give him every benefit of the doubt here. Now, these things are financed, James. This is the interest on the automobile over a four-year period of time. Now, I don't want anybody to take my word for it, Leslie. I want you to do your own third-grade arithmetic. I want you to take that automobile payment for 4 years, 48 months, and extend it out there to what the total expenditure was. Now, I want you to compare that with what was the initial amount financed, and you will find that $1 out of four was interest. Now, the interest rate was only 7%, but the volume is 25%. Now, this next one will help you even better because we're talking about a mortgage here. Like I say, I've been around the home business for years, and I know that the typical mortgage across the board in America only stays on the books 5 years. Now, I was in Grand Rapids, Michigan 6 years ago. There was a lady expert there on mortgages, and she said at that time in the USA, the average mortgage stayed on the books 2.6 years. And so, that's much worse than what I'm showing you. All right, now, have y'all run a 30-year amortization table on a house? Now, don't run off all 30 pages on the computer there. Just print out one. The tree huggers would go berserk if you read off all that paper. But just run off page number one, David. And there's 12 monthly payments on there. And the first payment was $1,000. Now, you don't tell the group how much of that was interest? Anybody? Yeah, it's practically all interest. You see, this rate might be 5 or 6% or so, but the volume is what we're talking about. Now, you see, that keeps repeating over and over. For instance, Leslie, do you know what percentage of cars traded in are not paid for? Well, you're getting close, but I tell you what you do. Go out to the automobile row in your town. In every town, the automobile dealers all line up in a row out there. And you get your best student decorum, and you get your yellow pad, and go see the sales manager or the owner and tell them you're doing a research project for your master's degree, and ask them that question. If they don't tell you 95%, I'll eat your hat. That's America. So this is perpetual. This is perpetual. This is the interest on the Bank of America card. This is the interest on the boat payments. That's comprehensive inclusion on the cars. Anything that's going yonder way that you'll never see. Now, let's say he's saving 10%. Well, let's do away with the green, and we've isolated the interest compared with saving 10%, Jane.
Halfway through the seminar, I'm explaining to people what a peaceful, stress-free way of life it is when you get the banks out of your life. A bolt of lightning hit my feeble brain. Look, here's an opportunity, man. Here is a lady, doctor, neurologist from Russia. I'm going to ask her a question in front of these folks, and I have no earthly idea what she's going to say. I'm going to take a chance. Doctor, what part does stress play in medical maladies? She turned and addressed the crowd, and she says, folks, it all starts there. Did that register? And so I asked the group, what is the biggest stress factor that you know out there today? What are people stressed about? Go ahead and tell me. Money. Yeah. You see, the thing that's caused all this is that the banking function has gone from the you and me level it never was all that big, but look, when I got out of college in 1952, 2 years of financing on an automobile was as much as you get. Okay? If you had a used automobile, it's 18 months. And you had to put 25% down. Now, it wasn't all that many years ago, the early part of the 20th century, particularly before the Federal Reserve came into being, et cetera. A mortgage on a home was 3 to 5 years, that's it. You had to come up with at least 25% down. All right, now what do we have out there today, please? Zero down, okay, on home and so forth. All right, 0% interest on your automobiles and 6 years finance and so forth. And oh, by the way, if you come into this deal, we'll skip the first 3 months. Now, the people are prisoners of the banking function.
Now, I'm an aviator. You learned that already, haven't you? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I learned something as a teenager, Johnny. You can't fly an airplane through a vacuum. It's got to go through an environment. Now, remember that 34.5 that I showed you there of interest going yonder way? And I'm comparing that with savings of 10%. That's a positive, and the other is a negative, right? Now, let's, making it more realistic, let's move the decimal one place right on those numbers. Now we got 345 and 100, right? All right, Johnny, the hundreds are positive. So here's this guy in Birmingham, Alabama, want to go to Chicago, due north of us, and his airplane can fly 100 miles an hour. Yeah, but he's got to go through an environment, hasn't he? Here comes this high off the left coast, and it's centered over western Kansas. You see that 345 mile an hour headwind, Johnny? Mm-hmm. And you notice that 100 mile an hour airplane went toward Cuba at 245 miles an hour. I've just described to you the financial condition of most Americans today.
And they say, oh, my airplane's going 100 miles an hour. Yeah, compared to what? Yeah. Now, Johnny, you know, if he really wants to go to Chicago under those conditions, the smartest thing he can do is land. Get on the ground. The air mass will move on. Have some patience, Bob. The air mass moves on, and now it's centered over Indianapolis. There is no wind at all in the center of that thing, is there, John? It's dead calm. He gets in that airplane, he's covering the ground at 100 miles an hour. All right, now I'm fixing to offend some of y'all, so brace yourself, okay? But this won't hurt long. You have just been brought face to face with the teachings of Dave Ramsey. Get out of debt, get out of debt, get out of debt. I couldn't agree more heartily. But none, I haven't met one single financial guru out there in my life that understands this. Let the air mass move on. Now it's centered over Washington, D.C. You notice that 345 mile an hour tailwind, John? And it's pushing 100 mile an hour airplane, and you get to Chicago in a hurry. Mary Alice, it's the same airplane, love. But you know, in the financial world out there today, I run into all kind of people that say, oh, I can make that airplane run 103 miles an hour. Another say, oh, I can get 105, so they fuss with each other. None of them are considering the environment is the most important thing. Well, you can't do anything about that in the aviation world, but you can in the financial world. Now, Johnny, 445 ground speed is impressive compared with 100. Yes, but sir, it's much more impressive than most folks realize. Everything that you do in the financial world, Bill, is compared to what everybody else is doing. Bill, you woke up this morning and your mailbox was a certified check made to old Bill for $1 million. How you feel? One of your better days, right? Well, your next door neighbor is your best friend. You want to share your good news with him. So you run out the front door with that $1 million check in your hand. You look over there, and he's got $1 million check out there also. He got one, too. Well, y'all both look across the street, and everybody's out there waving $1 million checks. Y'all look down the left side of the street, everybody's waving $1 million checks. You go back in this house, turn on the idiot box, there's Katie Couric. And she says, everybody in America got $1 million check today. You see, Bernanke came with helicopters and dropped out $1 million checks, baby. Do you know that's what the fool said? Yeah. If we just have to drop money from the helicopters, we'll do it. And do you know he gets paid for what he was doing? And now he's been replaced by Biz Yellen, who's got probably less sense. And who is the fool? Us, for putting up with that? Or them? Yeah, but we're the ones who are really putting up with it. Yeah. All you got to do is realize in that little video that I showed you, that I told you about Babanka, he tells you there's only a few of us. If you understood that, you could put us out of business. Well, if you understand what I'm talking about and listen to what James Nethery teaches so brilliantly, that you can become free of those folks in a relatively short period of time. He's got folks in this room that will testify that they have done this in a relatively short period of time. Okay? It can be done.
Thank you for joining us on the Banking with Life podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to like and subscribe and click on that little notification bell. Otherwise, join us on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher for weekly content.